There are some factors who influence the way we observe data, collect data. And we call this in general for bias. And there are several reasons for bias. We will cover some of them now. There might be systematic error giving incorrect estimates of the association between exposure and risk of disease. Bias would then be an alternative explanation for what is found. We have what we call selection bias. If you study, for instance, hospital-referred patients, then you do not have any information on patients not referred to the hospital. So that's a kind of systematic bias. For instance, if you study the referral for suspected thromboembolism in women, then it would be very important to find out how their use of contraceptives might have influenced the results. And if you do not ask about that, present or former use of contraceptives, you introduce bias, selection bias. Non-response in one of the study groups. Any difference between people followed up and not. There is always people falling out of studies. If you look at follow-up of former drug addicts, then you have to ask yourself, what about the drug addicts you do not find at follow-up? We have studied that. Information or observational bias, inaccurate and incomplete data, may give spurious associations. You may have recall bias in the persons you are asking. You may have interviewer bias, that the interviewer is not asking in the same way, or they might have ideas on what kind of answers they are looking for. Here you have a study of dropout from substance abuse treatment. And in a study of dropouts of treatment, we found that there were many reasons for people dropping out. And some people, when they dropped out of treatment, they managed to get out of the drug abusing habit on their own. And they then wouldn't turn up for follow-up, for instance, from the institution. And they, if you then calculate that they still use drugs, that's why they do not turn up on follow-up, then you have a bias. You have to reflect on reasons your respondents might have not to reveal the truth. We have found in studies that people even try to change personal number to avoid that they would be contacted by former treatment counselors. Then you have, in another area, the problem of people dropping out of studies. Statisticians helping pharmaceutical companies in studies, they have created last observation carried forward as a method to reduce the effect of no observations. As you see in the table here, they put the last number which was observed as the result in all the observations after the person dropped out. By doing this, they are introducing a bias, which is not a good idea if you have a lot of dropouts. If you have few dropouts, you might do it. Then you can do statistical analysis in a better way. If you then, as I've done in a study here, if you use this observation method, LOCF, you get better results than you would otherwise get. In many studies, they give benzodiazepines, which might be abused. They give it together with the new medication, and they do not give this information in the studies. And that's a kind of bias, which is not good for science. Using non-observed data results to improve the statistical power of your study are very frequently used in such studies of new medications during follow-up. Then we have what we call confounders. And the mixing of the effect of exposure on the disease with that of a third factor. You may have this in many cases when you study diseases. For instance, a study showed that higher levels of physical activity gave lower risk of myocardial infarction. Then it's very important that you put age into your model, and otherwise you will not observe such simple facts as the young exercise more but have lower risk of myocardial infarction. The old exercise less but have a higher risk of myocardial infarction. Age is clearly a confounder here. And what about gender? We know that men and women have different rates of myocardial infarctions. What about the job type you have? In the Whitehall study in London, they found that people in higher salary levels, they had less myocardial infarction than people in lower salary ranges. A confounder must be associated both with the exposure and the disease. Intake of fluids has not been shown to influence MI, so it's not a confounder. Alcohol consumption and the cardiovascular mortality. What do we know? You can observe when you compare alcohol consumption and relative risk of myocardial infarction that you have a U curve or J curve. And interpreting this curve, it's the risk is at the lowest level. You see that here. When you drink some alcohol, but not very much, it's compared to one glass per day. That is supposed to be the lowest risk level for myocardial infarctions. But when you study this group of people drinking one glass regularly each day, you find that they have a regular life, they have a high income, they are middle-aged, and they have less problems in their lives than other people. And even people not drinking at all have higher risk. And that's very strange. But when you study these people, you find that many of them have diseases which they should not combine with alcohol consumption. For instance, diabetes. So people with other diseases, other confounders, then they get a higher risk.